Welcome to Good News in the Morning, a program of words and music, bringing a Christian message of hope and encouragement to those who are looking for an intelligent, meaningful, and spirited approach to faith and to life. Yeah, yeah.
You're listening to CFRA Radio, and the show is Good News in the Morning. It's put on by Good News Christian Ministries, P.O. Box 184, Rideau Ferry, Ontario, K0G1W0. Way too much information, remember. Listen, just Google Good News Christian Ministries. You find us on the web. Listen, my name is George Sinclair. I am the lead pastor of Church of the Messiah here in Ottawa, and it is my great privilege to open the Bible and tell you about Jesus. And just before we get into our song and then our talk, we really need you to support us with prayer. And after you've prayed for us, please pray for us again. Please pray again and again and again and again. Pray for the speakers that God will use us to open the Bible and that the Holy Spirit will touch hearts. If you've also been blessed with some financial resources, then please consider sending a donation. And you can find out about that online. We're going to begin today by listening to Coffee sing Father, I Adore You.
Adore you, and I lay my life before you. How I love you. Jesus, I adore you, and I lay
morning. You're still listening to CFRA Radio, and the show is Good News in the Morning, put on by Good News Christian Ministries. Please Google us to find out more about us. My name's George Sinclair, lead pastor at Church of the Messiah in Ottawa. And today I want to talk about Christianity and evolution, now that I've got your attention. The Bible and evolution, Christianity and evolution. Is the way that evolution is taught in our high schools and our universities, does it basically prove atheism? Does it prove that all religions, including Christianity, are false? Or Is there some other way of understanding human origins? Is the Bible true? We're going to look at that today. It's a, you know, it's a pretty big topic. One of the other hats that I wear is I chair a yearly apologetics, the planning team for a yearly apologetics conference called Dig and Delve. And we sponsored a dialogue between Os Guinness and an atheist professor from the University of Toronto. In fact, the Christian Apologetic Organization, we teamed with the biggest, I think, atheist organization in the Ottawa area to put on this event. They chose their speaker. We had our speaker. And after the event, I was off in the corner. I had to lock up and everything. And I, you know, the atheist group, the main members were all in an excited huddle. And, you know, they went on and on and on. I could listen to them. They went on and on and on and on about how evolution proves that atheism is true. Doesn't matter how other arguments work or anything else, that evolution is scientific and science through evolution proves that atheism is true. Are they right? Are they right? So what on earth are we going to do about this? How are we going to even begin to talk it? So I'm going to begin by telling you something a bit odd. In 1997, 1998, in that National Basketball Association season, the Chicago Bulls were in the finals. And in the game six of the finals, which was in Utah, and the Bulls were playing a really, really tough team. In fact, you know, many people thought that Utah was going to be able to beat the Bulls. And the Bulls had Michael Jordan. He was in his, you know, I think close to his mid-30s, but he was in the pinnacle of his career, pinnacle of his physical fitness. He was and is the greatest basketball player who's ever lived, and he was on the Bulls. So we're going into game six. It's in Utah. It's a big, big, big game. And, you know, can you imagine that when the the coach, Phil Jackson's gathering his 15 players around him. You know, he probably said something like, you know, the whole team has to play hard. Everybody has, you know, even if you're only a tiny bit player, what you do, it's really important. And we have to play, you know, a full game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then he would have said, but we all know that if we're going to really go the distance, we really need to have a really big game, that the team has to be carried on the strong, broad shoulders of Keith Booth. And you would say, no, he wouldn't say Keith Booth. I mean, Keith Booth was the guy at the end of the bench. During the regular season, Keith Booth only played six games. And in those six games, he only had five baskets. He didn't even get a basket a game. So he averaged less than one basket a game. But he was there in game six. So do you think the coach would say to the team, we need to depend on Keith Booth to win this game? No way. What would he say? Michael Jordan, here's the ball. You're the man. You're the guy. Go out, you know, get the ball to Michael Jordan. That's what they would have said. So here's the big thing for us as we're going to talk about this issue. Ever since The Origin of the Species was written, when people look at this issue of science in the Bible, of evolution in the Bible, our automatic tendency is to go to Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2. But I want to ask you this question. If the entire Christian faith, if the entire relationship of science in the Bible, if the entire thing about atheism and our culture and science, if this is really, really a big issue, if this really is a big challenge, why would we give the ball to Moses? I want to give the ball to Jesus. I mean, that's what I want to do. I want to give the ball to Jesus. Like if the whole faith is going to rise or fall on a particular question, you know, I'm not putting Moses down and, you know, our Jewish friends, obviously they have to go to Moses. But why do we go to Genesis 1 and 2? Why don't we give the ball to Jesus? And so some of you might say, well, I don't know if Jesus ever talked about this. Well, he did, actually. I mean, it's a little bit of a, you know, it's not that convoluted. It's very clear. If you go to, what we're going to do before we look at Genesis, the book of Genesis, we're going to look mainly this morning at John chapter 1, verses 1 to 4. Now, you might say Jesus isn't talking here. It's John. But yet, listen, here's the thing. You know, Jesus had 12 disciples. And the reason we remember the disciples isn't because of the disciples. It's because of Jesus. And Jesus, you know, even people who don't, you know, on Christians, they would say that Jesus was a great teacher. So, you know, when you're listening to the 12 disciples, the 11, because, of course, Judas betrayed Jesus, when you're listening to the 11 disciples and then St. Paul, like what you're doing is you're hearing the teaching of Jesus. And out of the 12, the historical records show that out of the disciples, three were close. And out of those three, one was closest of all. And who was that? John. who wrote John chapter 1, verses 1 to 4, which is what we're going to look at. And, you know, so we can have a very, very high confidence that what we're hearing is ultimately how Jesus taught John, how Jesus helped John to understand things. So, you know, when you're listening to John, it's not just the bits in the red letter that ultimately are coming from Jesus, but the whole book is coming from Jesus. And what is it that John chapter 1, verses 1 to 4 say? Well, it's a very, very, you know, more normally we think of this as a Christmas text, and it is. But I'm just reading the very beginning, and listen to how it goes. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. In a word, it's a bit of a, you know, it both has a Hebrew sense and it has a Hebrew sense and it has a Greek sense, and it talks both about you know, the intelligibility of creation, the ordering of creation, the ordering logical principle. That's how Greek thought went. But just listen to the rest of the text, because it's very obvious that this is just a very, very poetic way of John to introduce Jesus. But here's the point for our talk, right? In the beginning was the Word, verse 1, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. Hear that? It's a very, very powerful text. It's very, very simple. And this text is going to go on. It's going to talk about John the Baptist. It's going to talk about Jesus. In fact, it's going to culminate in verse 14 and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only begotten Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. So what we see here is John connects the story, the reality of creation out of nothing with Jesus. And it's inseparably connected. And we believe that this really ultimately goes back to Jesus' own teaching. So Jesus is inseparably connecting the issue of human origins, and not just human origins, the origins of the cosmos, with who he is. They're inseparable in John. And so the teaching ultimately from Jesus, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. And then listen to this. It's very, very clearly put in two different ways to make sure we get it. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. It's a very, very powerful text. And so, you see, one of the things that we see here is that this is going to maybe surprise us, is that Jesus and the atheist club agree. They don't agree on everything, obviously, because Jesus obviously believes that God exists. But on this question, this, by the way, is a really, really big challenge. One of the many, many reasons why the Christian faith is true is as we think through how the Christian faith handles this, and you compare it with spiritualities, with pagan mythology, with native spiritualities, with Eastern religions. And it's very clear that the Christian account is the wisest account and the wisest and strongest alternative to the atheist account. And it really is. It really, really is. And so Jesus and the atheist club agree if, in fact, there is a way for science to account for all that we see and all that we know, that the human life and the complexity of the universe, if in fact there is a way of accounting for that without relying on God, it does disprove God's existence. And so Jesus and the atheist club agree. Isn't that a bit funny, eh? But here's the thing that the text is teaching. Here's what John is teaching, to put it, or Jesus is teaching, to put it very boldly. The uncreated God created all things, visible and invisible, out of nothing. The uncreated God created all things, visible and invisible, out of nothing. Now, some of you are saying, George, you've made this worse by giving the ball to Jesus. You know, I was just happy having my spiritual thoughts and just accepting that everything they say in high school and in university about these things is true. So, George, you haven't helped me. You've actually made it a little bit harder. Well, let me tell you how I was helped in thinking these things through. And this all comes from listening to this very powerful text, the idea that God has created, that only God is uncreated, that he created all things. He created them, everything visible and invisible, out of nothing. I was helped, believe it or not, many years ago by watching an episode of Star Trek. Star Trek, of all things. And in the Star Trek series, in three of the series, there was this this being called Q. And Q is omnipotent. And I'm not going to tell you more about Q because those of you out there who watch Star Trek, I'll get something wrong. But here's a thing that would regularly happen in these episodes with Q. And it's what struck me. I watched an episode of this many, many years ago. And I think it was like a little while later and I was out for a bike ride or a run or something like that. It just started to trickle away in my thinking. So what Q could do is he could make things out of nothing. And he would make things out of nothing, and what he made out of nothing was real. And then he would put the crew or the stars or some of the stars, often the captain, Jean-Luc Picard or the other captains, he'd put them in that real world, that real place that he made. I mean, maybe it was the bridge and of the Star Trek. And in one case, it was like a place in Earth. And the viewer watches, and even the characters know that Q has just made it out of nothing, just that instant. And now they find themselves in it. And they have very high science. And at first they try to figure out if it's just an illusion. Are they in a room to give the appearance of reality? But, you know, they have Data, they have, you know, Worf, they have their science people. And the science people, it's very, very clear that they are in a real place. Now, here's the thing. We, the viewer, without thinking anything at all about it, we know that the world, that place, that reality was just created seconds ago. But if you look at it, if it's in like the scene where it's like the Robin Hood episode, if you were to cut down one of the trees would have rings. Think about it, right? In other words, this world, if they were on the ship, the seats would look like they were worn. They would be able to tell how the seats were made. They'd be able to tell you the order that the seats were made. But the seats were made out of nothing, just instants before. So here's the thing. Here's the big thing that's been missed. Because we Christians have wanted to give the ball to Moses and not to Jesus, we've tried to puzzle out things in Genesis 1 and 2, and we've puzzled out how there could be days before the sun exists for the earth to go around, and we've puzzled out how plants could exist before the sun's created. And we've tried to puzzle all of those things out, but we should be given the ball to the broad shoulders of Jesus. And when we give the ball to the broad shoulders of Jesus, we see the teaching of creation out of nothing. And that's the fundamental teaching. And the doctrine of creation is very, very, very important. And we haven't thought about it very much. So let's just say here a bit of a thought experiment. Let's say that, our Orthodox Jewish friends are correct and the world is 5,000, everything we know is 5,777 years old. And let's say that God made it everything, including Adam and Eve, literally Adam and Eve, out of nothing just 1 second earlier or 5 minutes earlier. And God sends you and me and he sends some top astrophysicists and astronomers and biologists and geologists and engineers and he sends us back in time and he lets us know the world was just made 5 minutes ago. Okay? So let me tell you, when we go to the Garden of Eden, when you cut down a tree, does the tree have rings? Well, you know what? It has to have rings, because if it doesn't have rings, it's not a tree. In fact, you know, if we meet Adam, we might say Adam is 30 years old or 40 years old, but he was only 5 minutes old. But if we were to do tests, they'd say he's a 30-year-old man. And if at nighttime, when you looked up at the stars, the closest that a star could be, depending on, you know, when we're going around the planet and everything like that, the sun is 4.2 light years away. Would there be stars in the sky when you looked up at night? Yes, there would be. See, that's what's entailed in the doctrine of creation. You see, God did not make creation like a stage set. He made creation with real height and depth and a vast backstory. God did not make creation like a stage set. He made creation with real height and depth and a vast backstory. I had our church meets in the Ottawa Little Theater, and there's stage sets there, and the kids aren't allowed to go on the stage. But, you know, I had my granddaughter with me once visiting from out of town, and she was curious about it. So I brought her up, you know, took her by the hand, and, you know, if you go to the stage, you go behind the house, so to speak, it's just nothing, right? And God could have made it that way, but he didn't. He made it with a backstory. He made it with huge depth, okay? And it's real. And here's what it means. It means that the biblical doctrine of creation means that we cannot know when God created. we can only begin to map creation's heights and depths and explore its backstory. You know? And that's – and in fact, if you actually think about it, this same idea is now made clear. If we think about that and that big doctrine of creation is going to carry the heavy load, then we go back and we think about how the book of Genesis begins in chapter 1, verse 1, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. That's what it says. In fact, you want to know something that's really cool? In the original language in Hebrew, the word for God is plural. But because the word for creates is singular, it's not translated in the beginning God's created the heavens and the earth. It's in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. You have a plural form of the word God with a singular word for create. And it's a little bit of a hint, I think, of course, of the doctrine of the Trinity. And so this is what the Bible teaches us. And so here's what's so really important is to understand that the doctrine of creation means that that there's this depth and height to creation and what I'm calling a backstory to creation that's real. It's how it's what it means for God to make things out of nothing is it has to be that way, and that's what we have to think about more. And that means that the choice is not between science and faith. The choice is between two beliefs. Now, what do I mean by that? You know, a couple of years ago, there's a well-known atheist philosopher by the name of Thomas Nagel, and he caused a big uproar when he published a book, Mind and Cosmos, Why the Materialist Neo-Darwinian Conception of Nature is Almost Certainly False. And it's published by Oxford University Press in the year 2012. This guy teaches he's an emeritus professor. He teaches at New York University, and he's an academic, top-flight academic, and an atheist. And he caused a big stir because he came out and said that the neo-Darwinian, the account of evolution that we see in high school and university cannot possibly be true. Here's a quote. Whatever one may think about the possibility of a designer, and remember, he's an atheist. So he rejects the idea of a designer. The prevailing doctrine that the appearance of life from dead matter and its evolution through accidental mutation and natural selection to its present forms has involved nothing but the operation of physical law. That's what we're taught. This cannot be regarded as unassailable. It is an assumption governing the scientific project rather than a well-conformed scientific hypothesis. And later in the same book, he says this, but for a long time, I have found the materialist account, which is what we're taught in high school and university, of how we and our fellow organisms came to exist hard to believe, including the standard version of how the evolutionary process works. The more details we learn about the chemical basis of life and the intricacy of the genetic code, the more unbelievable the standard historical account becomes. That's why he caused a stir. You see, the choice is not between science and faith. The choice is between two beliefs. That's what the choice is between. In fact, here's what the choice is. And this is what people want to forget, okay? The choice is this. On one hand, that matter, pure chance, and cause and effect account for life and the intricate fine-tuned universe. Or, on the other hand, and I think here only the Christian faith provides a true option to this belief. God designed and created life and the intricate fine-tuned universe. See, one of the things that Thomas Nagel points out in the book is that the idea that matter, pure chance, and cause and effect can account for how the human mind works. It can't account for freedom. It can't account for human dignity. It can't account for creativity. It can't account for morals, and it can't account for love. And it just cannot ever do it. And here's the other thing. You know, this evolutionary idea, before there's life – and then once there's life, then maybe there's a combination of, you know, cause and effect and pure chance, or obviously is, and there's natural selection. But before that, everything before that has to come about purely by chance, purely and utterly by chance and cause and effect. the size of the sun, the distance of the earth from the sun, the size of the earth, the distance of the moon, the size of the moon and the distance of the moon from the earth, the angle of the earth's tilting, the speed at which the earth circles the sun, the speed at which the earth circles, everything, all of the chemical basis that is needed before life could even possibly happen, every single bit of this has to be completely and utterly by chance. In other words, in the 159 years since The Origin of the Species was written, the more science we know, the more it is impossible that that could happen by chance. I mean, listen, if you were off and you're on a boat cruise and you came to an island and it's an uninhabited island and you're walking around it and you're marveling it, you know, you're off somewhere in the South Pacific or you're in the Caribbean or something, and you come to a beach above the high water mark and somebody has laid out driftwood that spells help, H-E-L-P, nobody, absolutely nobody would think that a rogue wave came and went higher up on the shore, and as the rogue wave receded, the driftwood fell like that by accident. But let me tell you, the sun, the earth, the stars, the chemical basis for life, the chemical basis for DNA, that is vastly better designed and more complicated than having help spelt by driftwood. And nobody would believe that help spelt by driftwood had happened by chance. Absolutely nobody. You see, we're caught in this thing of the emperor's new clothes. In the story of the emperor's new clothes, these tailors tell the emperor that he had this special fabric that's really – he should have to have it because it will reveal that if you are unfit for your role or if you are hopelessly stupid, then you won't be able to see the fabric. So the emperor doesn't want to let on that he's unfit for the role or that he's hopelessly stupid. He doesn't want to say he can't see it. So they pretend to put clothes on him. And nobody who looks at him wants to admit that they're unfit for their role or hopelessly stupid. So they don't want to point it out. And until a little boy says the emperor has no clothes on. And that's our cultural moment. You see, because the fact of the matter is there's only two choices. Matter, pure choice, and cause and effect account for life and the intricate fine-tuned universe, or God designed and created life and the intricate fine-tuned universe. In fact, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. All things were created through Him, and without Him nothing was made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. Or as Genesis 1:1 puts it, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. That is vastly wiser. It is vastly wiser. Friends, only the creator and sustainer of all things could save us. And when we are saved by Jesus, it's a restoration. I encourage you to read the Bible and to consider the claims of Jesus Christ. God bless. We're going to listen in closing to Johnny Cash sing Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. God bless.
Then I looked over Jordan and what did I see? Coming for to carry me home. There was a band of angels coming after me. Coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot. Coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot. Coming for to carry me home. Well, I'm sometimes up and I'm sometimes down. Coming for to carry me home. But I know my soul is heavenly bound. Coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot. Coming for to carry me home. Coming for to carry me home. Well, now if you get there before I do, coming for to carry me home, tell all my friends that I'm a coming too. Coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot. Coming for to carry me home. Coming for to carry me home. Well, now they're coming for to carry me home.
Good News in the Morning is produced in the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA.